Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And welcome back to the show. Don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast, at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find them online at OFT-AFT.org. AFT standing for the American Federation of Teachers. Before we join Dorsey Hager, I'll tell you, there's a lot of buzz about Biden's infrastructure plan called the American Jobs Plan. And as I indicated a few minutes ago, there's some projections this could create 18 million jobs. And if Biden gets his way, this would reduce deficits down the road. It will take a long time for it to do that. But the bottom line is taxes have to go up, not as much as they were before Trump reduced them. And I know a lot of conservatives are up in arms about that, but I want to read something to you from Heather Cox Richardson. She is a professor on the East Coast. I fail to recall what university she's out of, but she makes a really good point. She goes back to the Eisenhower administration. This is what she writes. Biden is making a historic gamble that Americans are tired of the past 40 years of austerity and are instead eager for the government to invest in America again. He's also pushing back on the argument that tax cuts are good for the economy. This is not a plan that tinkers around the edges, he said at the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America Pittsburgh Training Center. That's where the announcement was made on Wednesday. Now, Biden's invocation of the interstate highway system, which he talked about in that address, began under a Republican president, Dwight D. Eisenhower, 1956. Now, get this. Eisenhower traveled from Washington, D.C. to San Francisco in 1919 with 72 military vehicles and about 280 officers and enlisted men as part of an Army convoy designed to show far-flung communities the military's new machinery. Well, when the nation's roads proved so bad that the convoy never averaged more than 10 miles per hour, the journey also illustrated the need for new national roads. So when he got into the White House, which was in 1953, 3 years later, he pushed for the federal highway system to build 41,000 miles of road and tie the nation together. And you know what the pushback was? You can't do that. It's socialism. He got a lot of grief. Now, how many people listening to this show, this podcast, are driving on highways right now saying, oh, my God, that was a horrible idea? Let's go to our live line right now, and I'm sure he's sucking this all in. Dorsey Hager, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Hey, Dorsey, welcome to the show. What do you think of that little piece of history there?
Well, good afternoon. Good Friday, Flash, and happy belated opening day. I think that little history lesson is lost on a lot of people, and I think it makes a lot of people wonder where we would be at today if we didn't have the national highway system. And if we keep ignoring our infrastructure and do not continue to invest and reinvest in it, unfortunately, we might find out the reality of that someday. Because, you know, we've talked about the major cities, you know, Columbus, Cleveland, you travel to Charlotte, you travel to Atlanta, you travel to Nashville, all are experiencing incredible growth, but their infrastructure, their roads, their highways are not keeping up with that growth, and it's making it very, very difficult. And the one thing that is also, you know, the infrastructure really hurts business. You know, we've got to be able to get goods and commodities back and forth, and that's why we're seeing a lot of business locate to Columbus is because of the demographics and the geography and the close approximation to more than 50% of the population in the United States. And if we fail to, like I said, to invest or even grow our infrastructure, I think it's going to be very detrimental to our economy. So I think it's not only an investment in infrastructure, it's an investment in our economy, and it's an investment in people. It's an investment that's going to create a lot of jobs, a lot of good paying jobs, so people will be able to provide for themselves and their families.
And Dorsey, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, you can't raise taxes. You know, when Eisenhower did that, the marginal tax rate in America was 91%. 91%? Can you imagine a 91% tax bracket today?
I know. But a lot of good things were done under Eisenhower. And like you said, the highway plan was one of the great ones that he really went after and accomplished. And I remember we were talking during election season last year, and even friends of mine were asking how I was going to vote in the presidential election. And you know, lots of reasons. But the biggest one was infrastructure. If you remember when Trump campaigned in 16, and the day he got inaugurated, he even met with President McGarvey and a lot of leaders from the building trades unions, and he said one of his first priorities was an infrastructure plan and an infrastructure bill to put more people to work. And, you know, he had the House and Senate on his side and never even tried.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know you're in the Central Ohio area. What's the reaction down there from both sides? Well, I know the Democrats are pretty much on board with this, but I know especially in Northeast Ohio where we record the show, we're getting some pushback from the hardline conservatives. But just trying to get the pulse here, what do you think going forward?
I think in Central Ohio, I think the mood is very positive. I think a lot of people are happy with what the president and his administration have done. I think that the infrastructure plan is going to be a huge hit. You know, we were talking off the air. I'm just starting to read a little bit about the Amtrak and the Cleveland, mm-hmm. Columbus, Cincinnati, Dayton connector, which will, you know, connect the four largest, you know, municipalities, markets here in Ohio. I think that's incredible. I think it's way overdue, but I think that's going to be incredible. You know, we're doing their 70-71 interchange here in Columbus, which is alleviating a lot of gridlock and making it easier to get through the city and from different parts of the city. You know, that costs money to do. So this infrastructure plan is going to dump more money into that. It's going to be able to keep that on target and keep that going. So, and another thing that I think a lot of people fail to understand when he's talking about infrastructure, and if you get into the infrastructure bill, you know, we're hopefully coming out of a pandemic right now. I don't know. The numbers are ticking upwards again. But at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, a lot of people didn't talk about the failures of our infrastructure. We didn't have a lot of manufacturing. We didn't have a lot of research places here in order to quickly come up, you know, with the medicines needed to help people get through the COVID-19, also to help develop the vaccine. And, you know, we didn't have places that could make the masks, the PPE, and the safety equipment that was needed. And that was a huge issue. And I think that that's one thing that this infrastructure plan will do as well, is it'll reinvest in a lot of research and a lot of manufacturing that maybe has gone by the wayside.
Yeah, so we don't have to go to China to get the products we need. Right now, the big issue is like semiconductors. They can't even build more cars because they can't get the computer chips to put into those vehicles. And just about all of them are coming, I believe, from South Korea, Taiwan. And then you got China in the fold. And China, this is the crazy thing, too. I wish these lawmakers would take a trip over to China and take a look at what they're doing, because I'm getting all kind of stories on what they're doing for their infrastructure. And it's probably surpassing us right now. So we can't just let this dangle around for the next couple of years because of some people saying we can't afford it. That's a non-starter there. All right, let's switch gears here a little bit. I know you want to talk about these data centers, and I believe Facebook, Google, they have a pretty good presence there in Central Ohio, and it's all about storage of data. What's the latest on that, Dorsey?
So, yeah, you're right. Google and Facebook are putting an incredible imprint on Columbus and Central Ohio. They continue to grow and expand, put more people to work, and keep a lot of our members to work, which is great. But we have a new one, and a lot of these are kind of hush-hush when they're in the planning stages until they actually break ground. And there's a group called Magellan that's representing a large company, and we're not sure who it is. But they were able to get some things done with the help of city council to be able to get some zoning done and stuff on the south side of Columbus to build a $300 million data center. The name of the group representing is Magellan. So, of course, we have lots of friends on city council. One of them, a great friend of mine, has been for a long time, is Manuel Ramey, and he called me and he said, you know, there's going to be some scuttlebutt about this, you know, yada, yada. So we had one of our large electrical contractors who does a lot of data center work in the Central Ohio area go down and give testimony. myself and Pat Hook, the business manager from the IBW 683, gave written testimony, and it passed city council, so that job's going to go forward. Obviously, those data centers are very heavy mechanical. It's a lot of work for the electrician, pipe fitter, sheet metal worker, the insulator. But it's all good. And talking to Emmanuel and talking to Department of Development for the city of Columbus and some of my friends at One Columbus, like Chip Holcomb, it is absolutely amazing to me that the Central Ohio market now has 52 data centers that have been constructed and built and are working for data storage and stuff. And, you know, like I said, it's the Googles, it's the Facebooks, it's even the Chase Banks and those, and Citi and everything. And it's absolutely amazing how much work there is.
Dorsey, that's pretty exciting. Any idea? I don't know, it might be premature right now, but is there any projection on what kind of jobs could be created down the road and for how long? Or is it too early to tell that right now?
No, I think just that one data center, we're looking anywhere from, at the height of the project, 300 to 400 jobs. So, you know, it's going to be a lot of construction dollars spent, a lot of wages earned, a lot of tax dollars, a lot of money made and tax dollars reinvested back in the community. You know, one of the knocks that a lot of people who don't understand construction in the community have on some of these data centers when zoning issues are done or even tax abatement is they say, well, you know, this data center is going to be built, but it's only going to create, you know, 20 full-time jobs. It's only going to create 40 full-time jobs. Well, yeah, that might be the case, but what they don't understand is a data center is different than a hospital or an office building. There's always constant maintenance in a data center, and basically you're rebuilding the whole inside of it every 3 to 5 years to keep up with the technology. So we always have a lot of, you know, electricians, like I said, pipe fitters, sheet metal workers, insulators in those data centers. So while the full-time jobs, the people operating the data centers and doing a lot of the IT storage for the customer, maybe 20 to 40, you know, there's always construction workers, always maintenance people from the building trades in there doing lots of work. So it's a continuous reinvestment, and it's good for the community.
Good point. Yeah, as soon as you get a device, it's outdated. So I understand that theory that you just laid out there. All right, I got to take a quick break. Dorsey Hager on our live line. Dorsey is one of our regulars. He comes from the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Twitter handle is BuildCentralOH. Later in the show, we're going to check in with the Labor Council for Latin American Advancement. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens. Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And we're back. Don't forget, you can check out the show on 5 different platforms. That would be Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and, of course, Pandora. All right, let's go back to our live line. Rejoin Dorsey Hager, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Many of you may not know this, but March was Women's History Month, and there was a lot going on, especially in organized labor. And Dorsey, I know your communications director apparently did a lot for Women's History Month. What actually happened down there?
Yeah, so Kelly Harrop came aboard in January, and she's been doing a lot of communications and outreach for us. She wrote a nice blog entry on our website. It was, you know, we picked it up on BuildCentralOH on Facebook and Twitter. We also, you know, had a lot of people, social media, share it and stuff. And it was a well-written piece. And she just talked about the importance of women in the construction industry and the impact and how we're continually doing outreach to try to grow, you know, our footprint with females here in Columbus and Central Ohio. And, you know, historically, you know, women have kind of been left behind a little bit in the construction industry, but we're seeing a lot of women that are wanting to get in the construction industry that share the same interests as men and for a lot of the same reasons. They like to work outdoors. They like to work with their hands. They like building things. And, you know, our Building Futures and Driving Futures, which really does a lot of outreach to economic disadvantage and females and people of color. If you come to one of our classes or if you talk to one of our graduates, you know, two of the biggest reasons why females continue to get in the union building trades programs is one, pay equity. You know, I think mm-hmm. it's getting a little bit better in the non-union sector. But right now, you know, with the pay disparity between women and men, a woman earns about 77 cents on the dollar that a man enters. And in the construction industry, it's a lot worse. A female working for an open shop or non-union company makes 30.9% less wages and benefits than a woman in a union program and working for a union building trades, you know. And a woman of color, it's even worse, 42.1%. So a lot of the things that Kelly did and the research, some of the information she shared with me, I thought she did a tremendous job. It was really good. The second reason why a lot of women are getting into the building trades is maybe either they're a single parent or their husbands are unemployed or underemployed. And, you know, our health benefits and our retirement packages are so good that it's very attractive, you know, our family medical plans. So that's another great tool that we use to recruit and to get females into the trades. And our building futures cohort that just started here the last couple of weeks, you know, we've got 20 people in it. We've got 7 women, not as many as we would like, but you know, 35% of the class is female. So we're really excited about that. And as word of mouth gets out, and as a lot of these women come through our class, they get placed, and they start, you know, on that direct path out of middle class, start making money, and they start graduating from their apprenticeship programs and start making the big bucks, like we say, I'm sure that it'll only grow and continue to expand, and we'll get more and more females into our programs.
And Dorsey, I think the pandemic has created an opportunity for a lot of women, because I've been reading women mostly were affected when it comes to losing jobs in the pandemic, because what happened? Restaurant, hospitality industry, they got pummeled. I mean, a lot of, because they were shut down. It's expected. And many of those restaurants, I heard like a quarter of the restaurants are not coming back as a result of what happened. So this is a good opportunity right now to get into the trades, because the trades were deemed essential workers during the pandemic. So going forward, this could be a call to action. I like what's going on there. So hopefully that trend will continue. Let's get into the you mentioned the building futures and driving futures. Maybe you can just reacquaint our listeners with those programs, because they're great programs.
Oh, yeah. The Building Futures program, like I said, we're getting ready to start. We just started another cohort. I think this is our 7th. You know, we're having tremendous success with the program. There's a lot of people that are interested. We have a lot of applicants. Our graduation rate stands at about 88%. Our placement rate stands at around 85%. And the average starting wage for Building Futures graduates is right around $20.64 an hour. And then, you know, their health care, dental, vision, pension, and annuity is over and above that. The Driving Futures program, and I just met with the Teamsters again last week, we started another cohort of that. I think that's going to be our 5th cohort. The class sizes are a little smaller, so we've got 9 in this one. But this thing's really taking off. You talk about the pandemic, it seems like more and more things are being delivered, more and more things are being shipped. The Teamsters are incredibly busy across all facets of their industry. The graduation rate of the driving futures is right around 96%. The placement rate is 92%. And the average starting salary is $49,500. And from day one, those people that are placed with a Teamsters, you know, a contractor or customer, you know, they get access right away to that Teamster healthcare, that Teamster retirement. So they're well on their way on a direct path to the middle class. Some of the success stories we've had out of both programs are incredibly tremendous. They're really, really good.
Very good news. Two great programs there, Building Futures, Driving Futures. All right, just a couple of minutes left. I guess you wanted to mention somebody retiring in Central Ohio. What's the story there, Dorsey?
Yeah, so Dave Moran, an international rep for the IBEW, great friend of mine. I met Dave 7 years ago when I came on with the Columbus Building Trades. We sat on the Act of the Ohio State Building Trades Board together. Just a guy who incredibly knowledgeable, hardworking, did a lot for his members and his membership with the IBEW. Well deserved. He announced his retirement. Of course, that creates the little bit of the moving up. So Ed Moore, our local business manager in Columbus, IBEW 683, who I've known for close to 20 years now, also a great advocate for union labor, a tremendous business manager. He will be replacing Dave at the international level, and then Pat Hook has been elevated from president to business manager, and Mike Morey will be the new president of 683. So I want to congratulate Dave on his retirement. well-deserved. Like I told him the other day, have a great time. Enjoy your time with yourself and your family. I know he's going to get out and travel a little bit, play a little golf. And huge shout-out and congratulations to Ed Moore and Pat Hook and Mike Morey. I know Ed will do a great job at the international level, and I know Pat and Mike Morey will keep the train moving down the track for 683 as, you know, the work continues to grow and they continue to recruit and grow their membership and their market share.
That's what it's all about. All right, my friend, columbusconstruction.org. You can follow them on Twitter, BuildCentralOH. All right, the Indians lost yesterday. You coming up for the home opener on Monday? What's the story?
I got to go by Meijer and see if they have snow shovels left, I think. Of course, I'm kidding. It's supposed to warm up this weekend, so it'll be a lot better. But I definitely, we've talked about this. I am so looking forward sitting in the outfield, watching some baseball, eating a hot dog, drinking a beer. You know, opening day was rough for your Indians and my Reds, but hopefully when we talk in a month, the tide will be turned a little bit and we'll be talking about some good things.
There you go. You take care. Be safe. Have a great Easter holiday this weekend, and we'll talk to you in a month, my friend. All right?
All right. Happy Easter. I'll talk to you in a month. Thanks so much.